And now, it's Media One Radio Group's local public affairs radio program, Community Spotlight. We're asking the questions you want the answers to.
Good morning again, everyone, and welcome to Community Spotlight, the Media One Radio Group's weekly public affairs program. I'm News Director Terry Frank. The effort to find out more about COVID-19 relief for local communities, the effort to entice cannabis growers and manufacturers, and moving ahead with broadband in the city. All that this week with Mayor Eddie Sundquist, who is with us in person for the first time since the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic. Good to have you back in studio, Mayor.
Well, thanks for letting me back in the doors, Terry. I don't know if you were going to for a minute, but it's great to be back and to talk to you live in person.
You're here early this week to record our program so you can attend this week's New York State Conference of Mayors event in the Albany area. I know with Jamestown City Council this week, you noted that you're hoping to learn more about what's going on with the COVID-19 American Rescue Plan. What's planned for NYCOM? What's going on there?
So just to note for your listeners, NYCOM is the New York Conference of Mayors, which the city has been an active member of that lobbying group for many, many years. NYCOM is an opportunity for mayors with cities and villages across New York State to get together and to discuss issues that are really challenging and conflicting cities and villages. Mm-hmm. We're really excited that we're able to actually meet in person with social distancing and protocols in place. And one of the things that we're really going to be hammering on is what do we do with the federal economic stimulus that the city and almost every town, village, and county, along with cities, will receive from the federal government.
We have learned that the city has received its first tranche or payment of the approximately $30 million total in federal funding from the ARP. Have you? Is that en route? How much did you get?
Sure thing. Well, if you're asking what our bank account number is, we can't give that to you over the radio,
right,
Terry.
Right.
But one of the things that we did receive is approximately a little over $14 million, which is one half of our allocation under the American Rescue Plan funds. That $14 million will, you know, stay in our account. We don't plan on using that until we've worked through a fiscal or financial plan with our city council, as well as getting feedback and information from the public. I think it's really important that throughout this process, not only do we create a plan with our elected officials, but we take that out to the public and receive feedback, comments. And really, I want to be able to educate the public on what we can and cannot use that funding for and what we're planning to use that funding for.
I know that there's always a time limit on funding from the federal government. What kind of constraints are you under with this? How soon do you have to have a plan ready and in place once the feds tell you what you can use it for?
So this specific funding can be used up until 2024. So you have to commit to projects by that point, and all projects have to be completed by 2026. So we have a very short window of time. They're meant to be funds that are spent, that you can use them for projects that are related. However, one of the things, as you pointed out, is we're still waiting for some more concrete guidance from the Treasury Department, from the federal government, on how those funds can be utilized.
Insofar as what they're going to be utilized for, and I talked with P.J. Wendell, the county executive, about this, and there's concern over going really hog wild, if you will, on infrastructure when there is an infrastructure bill that's still kind of looming out there in the federal government. And it's looking like it may happen, then it's looking like it's not going to happen. And we still don't know where exactly that is.
Yeah, we are quite unsure, but we're really excited about the potential for an infrastructure bill. You know, we have a lot of roadways and a lot of other opportunities to utilize that funding. So you're absolutely right. You know, we want to kind of wait, you know, take a pause, take a break. It's great to see all that money hit the bank account. You know, when you see that, you think you want to spend it. But these are precious taxpayer resources, and we want to make sure that we spend them in the most economical way possible and have long-lasting life for these projects.
I wanted to switch topics here because you recently announced that the city is open for business for cannabis growers, manufacturers, producers. Why did you do that now, and what kind of response have you gotten to that?
So I want to be very clear. What we're talking about here is economic development for cannabis growers and producers. We're not talking about dispensaries. That's a completely separate portion of New York State's law. The cannabis growers and manufacturers or producers is a really an economic opportunity for the city. While every other place is saying, we don't want it, we're not accepting of that. You look at Long Island, they're trying to zone out potential manufacturing. Here in the city, we're taking a different approach. We're saying, you know, take a look at our factories. Take a look at our low-cost water and electric. And the reality is a lot of the cannabis growth is done using hydroponics, right? Using water and electricity and space, things that the city has more than enough of and can do so at a cost lower than almost any other place in New York State. So we're encouraging those folks to come take a look at us. You know, when we look at other areas, other states that have done this, you look at a place like Erie, Pennsylvania. Erie has manufacturing their cannabis growing operations, 50 million dollar facility that employs 200 people just in the city. Why not look at that for something like the city of Jamestown in our rundown manufacturing areas?
This announcement has certainly drawn its share of attention, I think, though it's important to draw that distinction as you talked about it. Are people thinking too much about dispensary and not enough about the business of producing cannabis?
Absolutely. You know, it is important to note that under New York State's law, cannabis cannot be imported or exported. It needs to be grown in New York State. Mm-hmm. And there are people looking all over the place right now for sites to be able to construct facilities to be able to grow, whether it's medicinal cannabis or whether it's recreational cannabis. There needs to be a place to grow them and a location facilities built. We're not talking about dispensaries. I think a lot of the issues that we see are about where you place dispensaries, on-site consumption. Although we're happy to work with anyone that's interested to those are going to be highly regulated by the state through their Office of Cannabis Management.
Insofar as being able to say you will or you won't, you really can't opt out of this. Is that the way I understand it?
For the manufacturing or production facilities, the law does not provide any opportunity for a municipality to opt out. So as much as municipalities are pushing back, the reality is that there's no legal recourse for that. The only thing a municipality can regulate is the time, the place, or the manner of a facility under its current zoning laws. So as of right now, the city of Jamestown has zoning laws that look at where a manufacturing district could go. Those are exactly the same type of zoning laws that have been in place since the 60s and will continue.
You're listening to Community Spotlight here on the 6 Media One Radio Group stations. I'm News Director Terry Frank, and Jamestown Mayor Eddie Sundquist is with me this week. I did want to ask about something regarding infrastructure as well and things being built out or expanded, and broadband capabilities certainly come to mind. The city has begun engaging interest from what I have read in a municipally owned broadband network. Where is that process at right now?
So one of the things that I campaigned on as mayor was the discussion of how do we expand technology in the city, and part of that was, is there an opportunity to provide a high-speed, low-cost network for residents and businesses as part of the city of Jamestown? So this year, COVID is finally slowing down a little bit, although we have a long way to go. We were able to engage in a feasibility study to determine what would a network look like for the city, who would run it, how would we manage it, what type of partnerships could we develop, and what a cost would look like, all things that we need to start somewhere on. So as part of it, the consultant we engaged has started a survey of our residents and started to look at, you know, what's the current cost that people are paying now for services? Where could that cost end up if the municipality managed it? And what would a network like that be? So we're in the process of trying to finalize that that survey, that data, that information. We're hoping within the next month or two to have a final feasibility report. And then depending on what the report says, we're hoping to put together a broadband committee to get together and help make some decisions to propel the city forward. whether that's going forward with a broadband program, or as I can tell you now, we've had a lot of current private providers reach out to talk about additional services. Maybe there's an opportunity to get a better deal from some of our private providers, because I can tell you right now, one of the biggest concerns we've had is the cost of internet, really a utility, a need for internet, and it's too much.
Right now, I believe the BPU is looked at as the entity that would head this up, if you will. What kind of possibilities are there? I know the governor has placed a high priority on low-cost internet broadband access.
Yeah, absolutely he has. And, you know, to where that will go, I'm not sure. A lot of the private providers have now initiated a lawsuit against that $15 a month broadband initiative, and whether that's an overreach or not, I'll let the courts decide on that. But he's pointed out the idea that it needs to be low cost, right? We're spending too much. When your average connection, your really low speed connection, 100 megabit connection, ranges anywhere from $55 to $75 a month, is just really way too much for the our folks here. And business connections alone, stronger speed, dedicated connections, they're ranging anywhere from $100 to $500 a month, right? And it's such a vital need to have the internet. What really propelled this study was talking to families that really had no internet access or was working with private providers during the pandemic as they switched their children to remote learning, couldn't get even the free service from a Spectrum or other providers because they had a past due balance at any point in time. So you started to see, as during my conversations, foundations that stepped in to help pay past due bills just so that families could get free service for a couple months to keep their kids learning. We talked to the school district who had to buy hotspots to give to families to help kids come together to utilize the internet. We talked to mothers that only had one cell phone, that so only one kid at a time could really utilize the internet or a Zoom class. These are the things that popped up during the pandemic that really pushed this initiative forward to say, let's address this digital divide that's starting to appear in our community.
That's a good question, talking about hotspots, Wi-Fi hotspots. Do we have many in the city, or are we kind of a desert here?
Well, there are Wi-Fi hotspots around the city. You know, different providers will, give it. There's not really a public Wi-Fi system, although we've looked at trying to be able to provide that in the downtown core. However, you're really looking at your bigger businesses, the library, right? The library was opening up some days just to allow folks to be able to use their Wi-Fi service or their internet. You know, I envision an opportunity for the city to not only provide high-speed, low-cost internet, but even look at potential lifeline connections. How do we provide a free or low-cost small service to someone just to check email or apply for jobs, right? And we've been working with and speaking to the library about having them help us with this initiative to be able to push that out so that we can better understand the needs of the community when it comes to broadband access.
I did want to ask finally with regards to NICOM, I would imagine broadband is going to be another topic. Anything else that you're looking forward to from the conference?
Broadband is definitely one, and I've had the opportunity to present at these conferences on some of the initiatives the city's been pushing for broadband. But yeah, we're really excited to learn more about some of the financial policies coming out of Albany. I know one of the sessions is going to be a bit more on the bail reform efforts and some of the work on behalf of our lobbying group to try to reform what was known as the bail reform, right? Yeah. We need to have a little bit more discretion because we're seeing folks, as many of the local news stories showed, some folks been in and out of an appearance ticket 11, 12 times, right? We're not unique.
Oh, yeah.
It's happening all across New York State. And I'll tell you, it's a frustrating point for mayors. Just the cost of dealing with that has been tough.
All right. That's all the time we have this week. But Jamestown Mayor Eddie Sundquist, thanks so much for stopping by. We'll look forward to hearing about NICOM next month.
Sounds good. Thanks, Terry.
That's been Community Spotlight for this week. I'm Terry Frank. Thank you very much for listening. We'll talk with you again next week at this same time.